You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
College Football Today.
Oh, we are set for an SEC showdown national championship. Number 3, Georgia. Number 4, Alabama. Doesn't get better. Rock and Rich Sermonello. Both teams will be squaring off Monday night. But we do know that the true national champion resides in Orlando with the UCF Knights.
You just trampled on my line because I was going to say that I can't wait to see who the runner-up to the UCF Knights are Monday night. That's something we ought to talk about during this three-hour show. I mean, a feel-good story, UCF, but boy, they really have bumbled this process over the past week. Great victory in the Peach Bowl over Auburn, but I hate to break it to you, UCF. You are not the national champions. You will not be the national champ in 2017. That will be decided Monday night in Atlanta. And I love the fact that it's two SEC teams because it's ticking off the entire country. You know, the folks out there who are telling me they're going to boycott this game because it's so regionally located, two SEC teams, they hate the SEC. You're not going to boycott the game. I know you're going to watch the game. You'll be there with the rest of us. It should be a great matchup.
Yeah, you need to get your head examined if you want to. Do not want to watch this football game.
You're
because
not
it is
a college
much,
football fan
exactly,
if you're not watching this game Monday
night. Watch football. You need to tune in Monday night. SEC East, SEC West, two of the best teams in the country. We'll be squaring off at 8 p.m. in the Mercedes-Benz Dome. We have a great show planned for you today. We're going to walk through each team's strengths and weaknesses, Georgia's offense and defense, Alabama's offense and defense as well. We have three great guests on tap. Former Georgia linebacker Rennie Curran will join us at 10:39. We'll get his take about the culture change from Mark Richt to new head coach Kirby Smart. We'll be joined by former LSU running back Justin Vincent as well, who won a national championship in 2003, was the BCS Bowl MVP under Nick Saban, knocking off Oklahoma. And then Big Ten analyst Jerry DiNardo will join us. We'll get his take on the fantastic bowl performance by the Big Ten, 8-1 overall, along with his take on the national championship title game. And then at 11:39 Eastern, Gabe Morenci will join us. We'll get Gabe's best picks for the championship game. We'll get some prop bets as well. But, Rich, a dynamic bowl season. I mean, when you think about it, you take the start of the season to the end, and we look at the bowl performances, some great games that really came on down the stretch. And you look at that Fiesta Bowl between Penn State and Washington, just a dynamic game between both teams.
Yeah, I mean, it started a little bit slow in the postseason, a lot of blowouts, a lot of sloppy games, but it got progressively better, which is what we expect as we start to see the more elite teams, the more elite players, those guys that are looking towards the NFL, those top coaches facing off. When more was at stake, Joe, as we got closer to New Year's Day, the games got better. And it all culminates Monday night, and it really is a historical matchup because Nick Saban has a chance for his sixth national championship to tie Bear Bryant for the most, and this could be Georgia's first title since 1980.
And when you talk about teams gaining momentum for 2018, I mean, there's a bunch that we'll get into as well as the show progresses. Keep it where it is. When Rich and I come back, we'll be breaking down Georgia's offense. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello live in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
On College Football Today, Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello, talking about the national championship game between Georgia and Alabama. Rich, when you look at that semifinal game, Oklahoma was in the driver's seat, 31-17 at half. Everyone thought Baker Mayfield and the crew would just run away in the second half. Not the case. Sony Michel and Nick Chubb took the game over, and that defense led by Roquan Smith really stepped up. Georgia gets the 54-48 victory over Oklahoma in double overtime. Dramatic game. One of the best overtime and playoff games that we've seen in recent
best
years.
Best bowl games I think we've seen maybe since USC,
ever, maybe.
Texas.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best ever in terms of when you think of the ramifications and implications that were on the line in that ballgame. But I will say this, I am a Georgia fan. I thought they would beat Oklahoma, but if they play the way they did in the first half offensively against Alabama, they're not going to win this ballgame.
Well, or defensively too. I mean, count me in the group that felt that Oklahoma was in the driver's seat. It certainly looked at it. That was a 17-point lead until that mistake on special teams by Oklahoma, which gave Georgia a field goal just before halftime. But, you know, Georgia, to their credit, Kirby Smart, that coaching staff, they made the necessary adjustments. They were able to establish the ground game with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Jake Fromm did his part offensively, and the defense was outstanding in the second half. Now, obviously, very different opponent this week against Alabama from a defensive perspective. It goes without saying, it's kind of a rudimentary comment, but this game is going to come down to Jake Fromm, because all Alabama wants to do is they know they need to stop that two-headed backfield, really three-head if you count DeAndre Swift in there. But Sony Michel, unbelievable game, 11 carries, 181 yards, 41 receiving yards, and a touchdown last week against Oklahoma to overcome his big fumble. Nick Chubb, he has been there year in and year out, especially since his injury. Alabama's going to stack the line in order to stop that running game. It's going to come down to the young quarterback, Jake Fromm, who has been unflappable, has been so efficient, but can he deliver Monday night in the passing game? Because Georgia's going to need that. I don't think they're going to run for anywhere near the yards they had against Oklahoma.
Yeah, great point. I mean, they rushed for 317 yards in that domination second half over Oklahoma, averaging 9.3 yards per carry. That opened up the play-action passing game for Fromm. He completed 20 of 29 passes, hit some big plays to Terry Godwin and Javon Wims in the second half of that ball game. But I agree with you. I think when you look at this offense overall, Georgia's averaging 267 rushing yards per game. They've rushed for over 200 yards, Rich, in 12 of the 14 games this year. The only two games which Georgia did not rush for over 200 came against Notre Dame earlier in the year, 185, and the loss on the road in the Plains in Auburn, 46 rushing yards. Some of those were sacks as well. Again, I think they need to be more aggressive on first and second down. They need to open up the passing game. Not so much how many times per game you pass, but when you pass. If you're aggressive on first and second down, attack Alabama straight on with seam routes, post patterns, dig patterns to take the pressure off the offensive line, get that front seven thinking pass first. That could open up running lanes later in the ballgame for Michel and Chubb.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that'll be the game plan for Jim Chaney, the offensive coordinator of Georgia. I think you have to open up with passes. You cannot be predictable. I think if you run and you put Jake Fromm in situations where it's second and seven, third and five, that's a recipe for a lot of punts and possibly a lot of turnovers from the Georgia standpoint. So I agree with you. I think they're going to be aggressive. I think he's going to use his receivers who have gotten progressively better throughout the season, Javon Wims, Terry Godwin in particular. But I think those tight ends could be factors as well. Isaac Nauta, who has been underutilized, Jeb Blazevich, they have a good 1-2 punch at tight end, but really haven't been used that much this season. Again, I think so much of this comes down to Jake Fromm is not going to be riled by the situation. I just don't think he has that in his demeanor. I don't care that he's a teenager. I don't care that he's a true freshman. Flappability, unflappability, that's not going to be an issue. He is not going to be unnerved, even by this setting in the Alabama defense. But it's really not a matter of mindset or intangibles. Can he make throws? Can he fit the ball into tight windows against an absolutely airtight Alabama secondary? That, to me, is the key in this game. Turnovers, can he continue to be clean in terms of turnover? I think he only has, what, five picks this
five
year?
Five picks, yeah.
Which is phenomenal since he's been a starter since Jacob Eason went out. So Jake Fromm is the key. And then that offensive line. Offensive line has been better than I thought this season. I thought it would be a liability before the year began. Isaiah Wynn, Lamont Gallard. But they really have a tough test this Monday night against the Alabama front four.
And when you look at Alabama's performance against a mobile quarterback in Kelly Bryant and Clemson last week, I feel like Clemson played into Alabama's defensive strengths. Again, I think a lot of teams do as well. We saw a lot of hitch patterns, a lot of slant routes, which allows those linebackers and corners to jump routes right in front of them. I think that's the difference, and especially with Fromm as well. If you put him into long third down situations where he's forced to read coverage going up against Minka Fitzpatrick, those linebackers as well, those linebackers that can match Sony Michel in the short to intermediate passing game, they're going to have problems.
Yeah.
But if you take the pressure off of him early, roll the dice, again, it doesn't matter. You don't need to complete passes. Even if you stretch them and get them to think pass, that'll open up running lanes later, but you need to be consistent. If you miss a couple passes early and you get some three and outs, it doesn't matter. Still be aggressive as the game progresses, because as it's more of a battle. It's a 15-round title match, and which team could dictate the tempo will ultimately win.
And to your point, it's a chess match. These coaches know each other very well. For those who don't know, Nick Saban on the Alabama side, Kirby Smart on the Georgia side. Kirby Smart, for a number of years during crucial national championship seasons, was the defensive coordinator for Nick Saban. And for all of the assistant coaches under Saban who have gone to become either coordinators or head coaches, I think Kirby Smart and Nick Saban had the tightest relationship. Sure. They know each other exceedingly well. Nick Saban, 11-0 versus former assistants who became head coaches. But Kirby Smart has done a remarkable job. He is way ahead of schedule at Georgia. Only his second season in Athens. Obviously, they win the SEC title this year. They're in a national championship game, but also recruiting exceedingly well. So this is an opportunity on Monday night for Georgia to join the elite programs, to step up and get alongside the Ohio States, the Oklahomas, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, those elite programs. Georgia is on the cusp of joining them. And I think unpredictability, game planning, being able to sort of outsmart Nick Saban from an offensive coordinator standpoint, that is going to be crucial. Joe, I think you're spot on. You cannot be predictable against this defense. If you're predictable, you're looking at a recipe that Clemson had last week, which is 6 points and maybe about 2 or 3 yards a carry.
And what's interesting is we heard Phil Longo come on a couple of weeks ago and mention you still want to go with what got you there. And I agree with that to a degree. And especially in big games, it's the team that's able to break tendencies early on that will win the ball game and take chances.
Right.
If you're going to play it straight up and they are game planning and watching film, because Nick Saban and that defensive staff as well, they're Jeremy Pruitt, they're breaking down which team are we going to face? Are we going to face Oklahoma? Are we going to face Georgia? They've watched tape prior to that game on both teams. So they have a read early on which team offensively in terms of what they like to do. So that, and when you break this game down, that's what makes Nick Saban and those defensive coaches for Alabama just elite, because they outthink the offensive game planner. And I think when you break this game down for Jim Chaney, it is going to come down to his aggressiveness early on, and more importantly, his aggressiveness in terms of formations as well, Rich, not just play calling. Can they spread out Alabama from a formation perspective? Don't put it into a pro-style offense. Put Sony Michel out in the slot. Utilize Nick Chubb in the backfield. Get DeAndre Swift mismatched on linebackers and nickelbacks to create mismatches in the passing game. It could be early on. Could be in swing passes. Could be in the screen game to neutralize the pass rush of Alabama.
Well, and what's interesting, too, is you have a short window in preparation for this game. We're accustomed to leading up to the championship game prior to the semifinals, there's typically more than a week. This is the shortest window between semifinal games and national championship. And I've heard it all week. People have said, well, the turnaround is always a week during the season, during the regular season. And this is kind of like back-to-back road games in the case of Georgia out in Pasadena, now in Atlanta. But this is the national championship. It would have been nice if there was a little bit more time. I'm not talking even from a physical standpoint, but from what you're talking about, preparation, to have a few more days. I mean, Georgia got off the plane in Pasadena Tuesday. they have a very tight window to prepare and put a game plan together for the Alabama defense.
Yeah, and when you look at personnel as well, I think that's where Georgia benefits because they are four deep at the running back position. Outside of Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, they have DeAndre Swift. They could utilize Elijah Holyfield. So it's a multitude of players. And then we've seen the progression of Javon Wims, especially in the second half of that ball game. He's a player you need to keep an eye out on. He does have 704 receiving yards, seven touchdowns. Terry Godwin's added another six receiving touchdowns in there. And when you look at Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, I mean, Nick Chubb leads that team with over 1,300 rushing yards, 15 touchdowns. Sony Michel, 1,129 rushing yards, 16 rushing touchdowns as well. So both backs will need to be involved early, not just in the running game, but in the passing game as well to get the victory over Alabama. When Rich and I come back, we'll be talking about the Dogs' defense. Keep it where it is. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Roaring into Monday night's title game, Georgia-Alabama. We broke down Georgia's offense led by their freshman phenom, Jake Fromm. Going to talk about this defense that was battle-tested early on, made halftime adjustments. Rich, and they stuffed Baker Mayfield. They shut him up on Sunday night. Dynamic second half performance led by Roquan Smith. They're going to need that second half performance against Jalen Hurts in order to get this victory.
And I think they get it. I really do. I think the momentum from that performance against Oklahoma, they looked terrible in the first half. I mean, they looked slow. They looked heavy-legged. I was very surprised by that. I didn't think they would be passed on and run on as easily as they were, but this is a very different offense. This is a manageable offense. And Joe, when I look at the Georgia defense, you and I talked about it a lot during the offseason, during the season, the regular season. You know, Georgia looks like Alabama East in many regards, and that is most evident on the defensive side of the ball. When I look at this Georgia defense, they're tough at the line of scrimmage. They're fast and physical from the second level, led by Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, David Bellamy, those linebackers that go from sideline to sideline in a hurry. And the secondary, without a lot of household names, has been outstanding all year long. Dominic Sanders, Malcolm Parrish, J.R. Reed. This defense reminds me of a vintage Alabama defense. They do so many things well. They're so fast to the ball. They're chaotic. Not as many sacks as I thought they would have this season, but a fair amount of turnovers. And I think they have a significant edge on the Alabama offense, which is one-dimensional. They'll try to run the ball. They don't have the same passer that Georgia does. Jake Fromm is the better pure passer than Jalen Hurts is. So I say advantage Georgia's defense. I think they're going to have a good showing. I think they'll continue that momentum that they had in the Rose Bowl.
I'll say this about Georgia, and I've been a fan for years now. The difference between Mark Richt and Kirby Smart is the mental resolve, because if this team was coached by Mark Richt, no offense, if they were down 31-17 at the half to Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma, I think they would have folded.
It's an interesting point.
I mean, Kirby Smart made halftime adjustments. Mel Tucker made halftime adjustments. They bought in and believe that they can win that ball game, and I think that's the biggest change for Georgia. They've always had top five talent, Rich, for years now, and Mark Richt couldn't cultivate that talent to the next level. Kirby Smart is doing that in such a short period of time, and it's come more to physicality on the defensive side of the ball. You're talking about a Georgia defense that's only given up 121 rushing yards per game. They've held 6 of 14 opponents under 100 yards rushing this year. But more importantly, you said that secondary. Dominic Sanders leads that group. They're only giving up 167 passing yards per game. And the way they covered those running backs in the short to intermediate passing game, that's a reason why they were able to pull that victory out in double overtime.
Well, and it's interesting, too. Again, short window for Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart to prepare for the Alabama offense, but I don't think you need a ton of time. I mean, I think it's very elementary what Alabama's going to do. They're going to try to run the ball with Damian Harris and Bo Scarborough. They'll have some RPO in place in the game plan for Jalen Hurts, but in terms of that passing game, you have one player to worry about. It's Calvin Ridley. So that secondary is going to put all of their focus in stopping Calvin Ridley. Nobody in that passing attack, either wide receivers or tight ends, we had grown accustomed in the past, most recently with O.J. Howard in Alabama, utilizing the tight end. That doesn't exist. Irv Smith has been, you know, sort of an afterthought, more of a blocking tight end than anything else for the Alabama offense. So Georgia can really focus, stack the line of scrimmage. I think Roquan will be close to the line of scrimmage. I think those safeties will be pressing up as well. They're going to be much like, you know, Alabama wants to do with the Georgia offense. Right. It's very similar. It's strength versus strength. They're going to want to put Jalen Hurts in third and long situations. And what has vexed Alabama in recent seasons is the inability to convert on third down. And if you could put Jalen Hurts in third and six, third and seven, I think in that situation, you're going to see a lot of J.K. Scott punts and a lot of opportunities for Georgia to get back on offense.
Well, I agree with that, but here's the recipe I think Georgia needs to do from a defensive perspective. Somebody asked me this last night when I did the show in Vegas. Are they going to be aggressive in terms of blitz packages? I don't think so. I think the way you have to beat Alabama, and I'll tell you why, is that I think they need to play more zone coverage. Force Jalen Hurts to methodically work down the field. They played a lot of man-to-man coverage against Baker Mayfield because of the five-wide formations and Baker Mayfield's ability to get the football out quickly and make reads in terms of the passing attack. Jalen Hurts is a mobile quarterback. If you bring pressure from the outside, he breaks contain. He's going to have huge running lanes outside the pocket. That'll open up broken plays, could allow some big plays in the vertical passing game. I don't think that's the recipe to beat this Alabama offense. I think you play more nickel. You play more zone coverage and force them into third down and long situations. Force him in the pocket to read coverage. Keep the defenders on the perimeter because they have the speed to run sideline to sideline. But do not blitz Jalen Hurts. It could be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, you do not want to open up running lanes for Jalen Hurts because those are the big plays that could be a part of the Alabama offense. When he gets out into open space, he's extremely dangerous, not a dangerous passer. He can get the ball to Calvin Ridley on the outside, but where I would be most concerned is when Jalen Hurts breaks containment, gets outside of the pocket, and begins to head upfield. That's when he becomes a major factor for the Alabama offense. Now, from the defense and the Georgia perspective, do you have someone spying Jalen Hurts? Do you have Roquan Smith sort of keeping that eye on Jalen Hurts to make sure that he stays in the pocket? Because when Jalen Hurts is in the pocket, Alabama's offensive potency goes down significantly.
Yeah, I think you do, but I think Roquan Smith is possibly one of the best defenders in terms of pass coverage. The way he covered Rodney Anderson, especially in the short to intermediate passing game in the overtime period, could be a factor that Alabama wants to create, especially if Kirby utilizes a spy against Jalen Hurts, because when you look at the second leading receiver in terms of receptions on Alabama's team outside of Calvin Ridley, it's running back Bo Scarborough that does have 16 receptions, only 108 yards. So that's his check down. Yeah. So they're going to want to force either Bo Scarborough or Damian Harris on a linebacker, wheel routes, screens, flares, to get them out into space. And if you have a spy on Jalen Hurts and it is Roquan Smith, the team's best defender from a linebacker perspective, that could be a matchup as well that Alabama could take advantage of.
Well, and I'd like to see more from the Georgia defensive line on Monday night. Trenton Thompson, John Atkins, Jonathan Ledbetter, good in run defense, not a lot of pressure this season. And Trenton Thompson has shown the ability in the past. I go back to the bowl game last year against TCU where he was virtually unblockable at the line of scrimmage. I'd like to see that kind of pressure against an Alabama offensive line that is going to be with without one of their best blockers in right guard, Lester Cotton. Lester Cotton doesn't look like he's going to play. And if he tries to suit up with that bad knee, he's not going to be 100%. So that could be a slight advantage for the Georgia defensive line. If they can create any pressure with the three-man front and allow those linebackers to sit back at the second level and contain, I think that's another reason that Alabama is going to struggle offensively.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I look at Kirby Smart. We broke it down that he did coach on, was under Nick Saban for 9 years, won a couple of national championships there, leading that defense. He understands the strengths and weaknesses of not just only the defensive players, but the offensive players as well in terms of scout team. So he understands what Jalen Hurts is good at. So that's why I think they do have a slight coaching advantage, even though it's Nick Saban, it's the mad scientist, Jeremy Pruitt. Let's also keep in mind, one coach that is not there, he's in Boca right now, Lane Kiffin for that offense was huge. A different night and day type of offense now with Brian Daboll at the helm.
Yeah, there's no question. We'll talk about it in the next hour, more so about the Alabama offense, but I'm concerned about Brian Daboll. I don't think he has done a great job this season. I don't think he's been inventive or unpredictable. He has good personnel. He really has outstanding personnel. And I think Alabama, from the offensive standpoint, hasn't developed a real personality. We know what they want to do. They want to be able to pound it between the tackles and make life easier for Jalen Hurts. And again, I'll talk about it in the second hour, but against the better defenses on the schedule, and Georgia certainly will be one of them on Monday night, Alabama has been absolutely pedestrian with the ball.
And if you could score first on Alabama, you have a chance to knock them off, or at least be in a game score for score, because what the Alabama offense does better than anybody in the country, they jump up early, which allows them to dictate the tempo of the game, and more importantly, allows their defense to take over and forces teams to play catch up, and especially in this matchup with Jake Fromm, that's something the Georgia defense cannot allow. They, if anything, it's got to be a field goal early, and then allow their offense to match them.
Yeah, I hope it's one of the games that I expected to be, which is every possession is going to count. I believe it is. I think this will be a close, competitive game. I don't think anyone's going to run away and hide, but getting off to a fast start is big in every game. But this isn't Georgia and Oklahoma, where teams can trade blows back and forth. It's not going to be a track meet. It's not going to be a shootout. There's just not enough offensive firepower versus these two defenses. So every possession is going to count. Fast starts are going to count. Momentum and tempo are going to count. And then it's going to be interesting once we go into the halftime, because few coaches are better at halftime adjustments than Nick Saban, but it's hard not to be absolutely overwhelmed by the job that Kirby Smart did. And Joe, you brought up a great point. It was the mindset. Other coaches, other teams might have packed it in at that point. Georgia just rallied the troops and came back. It was a remarkable performance.
And it's also the personnel. Last year, they had O.J. Howard, Gerrick Dieter, Ardarius Stewart. So maybe they weren't making a lot of plays, but Lane Kiffin could utilize a lot of different formations to create mismatches. And maybe you're still only running Damian Harris or Bo Scarborough or Jalen Hurts, but they're coming out of different formations. And I think that that's the difference that you see between Lane Kiffin and Brian Daboll as well. Georgia's going to have to maintain gap integrity. They cannot be overly aggressive here with Jalen Hurts breaking contain, because it could be a long day. But Georgia did hold 7 of 14 opponents to 50% or less completion percentage on the year. They gave up 287 to Baker Mayfield last week. They were averaging 377 per game in 2017. When Richard and I come back, we'll be talking about some of these players moving on to the next level in the NFL. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Great talent on both sides of the ball for the Dogs and the Crimson Tide Monday night. We're going to talk about some of these players moving on to the next level. May 2018 NFL Draft. We'll start with Georgia, Rich. I mean, two of the top running backs in the country, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, really coming on later in the year. A lot of people talking about Darius Geis, obviously, Penn State, Saquon Barkley. But Nick Chubb and Sony Michel just getting it done each and every week, setting records in Sanford Stadium. And they're barking all the way to the title game because of their performances.
Yeah, and I like the fact that both players came back for their senior seasons, added a little more mileage on the tires, which is not great for their pro careers, but I think it says a lot about their character. Nick Chubb has been a class act throughout his career, tough between the tackles, ultra productive. I think he'll be a quality NFL back, but I love Sony Michel. I think he fits well into NFL systems. Not just a terrific running back, but an outstanding receiver. I think he's truly a three-down running back. I think he's got a bright future and hasn't been as banged up over the years as Nick Chubb, so I wouldn't be surprised if Chubb has the higher profile from a collegiate standpoint, but 5 or 6 years from now, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Sony Michel is the more celebrated NFL running back.
I couldn't agree more, and credit former offensive coordinator and current Colorado State head coach Mike Bobo for really recruiting Sony Michel in Athens and utilizing him early on 3 years ago. He utilized him in the short to intermediate passing game. He put him out like a Reggie Bush, Alvin Kamara type of running back that you see with New Orleans. And I couldn't agree more. You look at Sony Michel this year, he is a dynamic dual threat running back that's also used in the Wildcat. We saw that in the overtime period. That could be a factor on the next level as well. We see teams doing that with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram.
Which is a great comparison, by the way.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Kamara is a great comparison.
Yeah, Kamara just stepping out on the scene. When I look at Chubb, though, a productive running back, had the ACL injury in Knoxville against Tennessee. He reminds me, really, of a spitting image of former Oregon running back Jonathan Stewart. I mean, a 10-year career in the NFL, productive, not I don't want to say an elite runner. Right. We don't look at him as an Adrian Peterson during his tenure there, but just quality yards, 1,000-yard rusher, could catch the football, just great work ethic, blue-collar player that would play special teams, whatever it took to get it done. And that's where I think both players will have long careers at the next level.
Yeah, and Nick Chubb, I don't mean this in a derogatory way. I don't think he's exceptional in one category. I think once we get to the NFL combine, all-star games, pro days, I don't know if he's going to test off the charts. He's not going to be Saquon Barkley in that area. But if you want someone who is tremendously steady, can get you 100, 115 yards and a touchdown week after week, great in the locker room, great within the community, someone who you can count on with consistency week after week, that is Nick Chubb. I think Sony Michel just has the higher ceiling. I think he does more things well, more dynamic. We saw that in Pasadena against Oklahoma, did it on the ground, did it as a receiver. I tell you what I liked about Sony Michel, had that devastating fumble that could have led to a victory against Oklahoma, right? Oklahoma takes it back the other way, a fumble by Michel. You know, he could have turtled up at that point. He could have basically been just inconsolable. And what does he do? He bounces back and scores the game-winning touchdown. So a lot of resiliency, kind of a microcosm for that Georgia football team. So I'm a big fan of Sony Michel going forward.
Well, when he scored that touchdown in the double overtime, I can't even tell you I was out of my mind when he did that, because he came out of the Wildcat, which I said that could be a factor in that ballgame. They held it for the overtime period, but now we see some of the NFL teams going back to that to get the extra blocker, and that could be added value as well, more touches. And again, the mental resolve, credit Kirby Smart for that, because again, he could have folded, this team could have folded, they rallied around him, Jake Fromm, everybody stepped up, and that's where I think you'll see Sony Michel be an elite running back, even possibly, they didn't do it enough in Athens once or twice, but in early part of his career, special teams as well, punt returns, kick returns, you could utilize him in a multitude of ways. So he is a five-tool player. I'll say this about the flip side. The guy that I really love, though, Alabama wide receiver Calvin Ridley, to me, I'm going to go out on a limb here. He's not the next Julio Jones. I believe he's the next Antonio Brown for Pittsburgh.
Really?
A body type, the way he comes out of his cuts, hands. runs.
Yeah, and I think he gets, you know, he gets a little bit lost. You can't judge a receiver like Calvin Ridley based on the numbers, because if he was playing at Oklahoma, you know, you could ratchet up his numbers by 50% or right. more. If he was in the 2,000
yard receiver.
Right, exactly. He would be a Biletnikoff Award winner. He's not, because of the offense that he plays in. But what I like about receivers from programs like Alabama is they are fundamentally sound. You talk about the hands, you talk about the route running, the way he runs the tree, he does that like an NFL receiver. Right. Plus, in an Alabama offense, you get some of the added benefits that you wouldn't normally from a wide receiver, like being able to block downfield. You know, he could be a downfield blocker. He's tough. He's physical. He won't drop passes. So, again, you're not going to see it in the numbers. He hasn't declared yet. He'll declare as soon as the national championship game is over. I think he is a first-round draft choice. I think Sony Michel gets drafted higher than Nick Chubb. But of all the players, the two I really like are Minka Fitzpatrick and Roquan Smith, both juniors, both should and probably will declare next week. And I think both are first-round talents, maybe as high as top 10 overall.
Yeah, and fantasy guys will be like, Minka Fitzpatrick. Yeah. You know who he reminds me of? Darryl Green.
I have a different name. I was going to say Jalen Ramsey from Florida State.
A younger guy, yeah. Yeah. People, I'm old school. I go Darryl. I mean, he really is a legitimate lockdown corner that we haven't seen in recent. I mean, 5'2 players as well, tackle in space.
The versatility, you could practically play this kid as a small linebacker. That's how versatile he is. He's played strong safety, free safety, cornerback. He does everything. There's a reason why Nick Saban loves this kid. I mean, he believes like Minka is a coach on the field, very mature, very smart, great instincts. He will be a future all-pro player. But how about some of the kids that are maybe a little bit lower down, like a Rashawn Evans from Alabama? There's so much next-level talent that you'll see in Monday night's game that's going to translate well to Sundays.
And the tight ends for Georgia, Blazevich and Nada, whichever one decides to move on, I mean, they can. I mean, Blazevich, he's not going to go first four rounds. He's not a Jeremy Sprinkle type of a tight end that we've seen from Arkansas, Hunter Henry, in terms of that regard. Bucky Hodges that came out for Virginia Tech. He's a different type of mold. He's a blue-collar player. You could utilize him. He's more like a Heath Evans for Pittsburgh back in the day. He's a blocking tight end that can catch over the middle and just runs solid routes. Nada is more of a tweener, a Gronkowski type that could be utilized into red zone opportunities. But when you look at Georgia's offense as well, I mean, the guy that I'm really looking at now moving on to the next level whenever he decides is Wims. I mean, did you see his ability to catch the football at its highest point away from defenders? I mean, he screens. He's a big body in red zone opportunities. Again, we haven't seen his full upside because of the progression of Jake Fromm, but this is a player that you can see has next level talent.
Well, and I think that next level talent will be showcased more as he gets comfortable with the young quarterback. Yeah, and as we look ahead to 2018, you know, Jake Fromm is going to become a bigger part of that Georgia offense. You're going to be losing Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. DeAndre Swift really should have a breakout sophomore season in 2018. But with Swift and Fromm getting more comfortable and Fromm becoming a more prominent part of that offense, players like Wims will see their numbers go north. A couple of other guys that I'm really looking forward to watching Monday night and then in the NFL, Ronnie Harrison, the big safety from Alabama, and then Deron Payne. You know, it was not an anomaly that this kid, the big nose tackle for Alabama, had an interception quickly followed by a touchdown reception from Jalen Hurts. That kind of agility for an interior lineman is not uncommon for Alabama, and the fact that he can move so well, that he's so nimble at 6'3", north of 300 pounds, bodes extremely well for him in his professional career.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Allen, I mean, had a solid first year in the NFL, so when you see that type of talent move on, you look at Eddie Jackson as well, that did get drafted after the injury, so Harrison, the one thing when you look at Alabama's defensive player players and the two that we're talking about in terms of Harrison and Fitzpatrick, what they do better than anything is their ability to tackle in space. In today's NFL, that's one of the most important factors for safeties and cornerbacks because, again, when you play a five-wide type of offense in terms of you can't bump and run like you used to back in the day, you need to minimize big plays, and their ability to tackle in space is a main reason why they'll be, in my opinion, first-round draft picks.
Well, and those Alabama defenders, they're coached like professional athletes. They're raised like professional athletes, and they play in games that are big-time games, SEC, national championship level, always in the playoffs. So if you're getting that kind of player, he's battle-tested. He knows what it takes to win titles. I'll throw out one final name. Levi Wallace is a kid who arrived in Tuscaloosa as a walk-on. I love the mindset of the walk-on. I've always kind of liked that Baker Mayfield chip-on-his-shoulder type of a player. Levi Wallace did not have a scholarship when he arrived in Alabama, but he has gotten progressively better, has waited his turn, and now he's had a breakout senior season. So, again, I'm not talking first couple of rounds, but he could be a fourth or fifth rounder that goes on, makes a 53-man roster and really begins to build a career.
Yeah, that's a great point. And when you look at from the offensive perspective for Alabama, we touched on Weems and Godwin. When you look at Alabama's offense, Bo Scarborough's ability to catch the football, I mean, not a lot of yards, 16 receptions this year, 108 yards, but he's showcasing his talents. I think he's a different type of mold than Derrick Henry that was more just a between the tackles runner. You see how they utilize him with Tennessee. Bo Scarborough could be picked up in possibly the fourth or fifth round and be utilized in the short to intermediate passing game. When we come back, we'll be breaking down the big game. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello live in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Studio 34.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Lisi, Rich Sermonello talking 2017 National Championship. We've had a great bowl season, and Rich and I are going to recap and review some of the teams and performances that really caught our eye this bowl season. For me, I said it last show, Ahmad Bradshaw and Army, what they were able to do against San Diego State really stepped up for me. And I have to give kudos to James Franklin and Penn State for losing offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead and converting 13 of 17 third down conversions against that Huskies defense. Yeah. I mean, a phenomenal effort for Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, team-wise, I'll go with Michigan State, not just because it was personally beneficial. I love Michigan State against Washington State. That's not why I'm bringing it up. I just thought that this was a team that could use the postseason as a launching pad to 2018. I love the youth at Michigan State. Mark D'Antonio did a good job. It was a rough offseason away from the field. He did a good job of rallying the troops, getting them prepared for this season. Brian Lewerke continues to impress. I think he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in college football in 2018. So Michigan State, and how could we not say UCF? I mean, throw out the fact, yeah, maybe Auburn wasn't motivated. Maybe they didn't want to be at the Peach Bowl. But for UCF to finish their season perfect, 14-0, beating Auburn, which had beaten a couple of top-ranked teams earlier in the regular season, UCF, Shaquem Griffin, Mackenzie Milton, Scott Frost. I think all things UCF prior to January 1st, I was excited about. When you start throwing out that you're the de facto national champs, I start to get angry. UCF, Danny White, the athletic director, please shut up. You're making a complete moronic jackass of yourself. You're not the national champs. That's happening Monday night. But well, I loved UCF on New Year's Day.
But I was tweeting out when that happened. Wake up, Danny White. You beat a team that was 10-2, that beat Georgia and Alabama at home and lost to Clemson and LSU on the road. Okay, so I still don't see the rationale based off of that.
Right.
But 1998, we talked about Sean King and Tulane.
The Green Wave.
Head coach Tommy Bowden. 2004, you had Urban Meyer and Alex Smith.
And
knock off Alabama.
Sugar Bowl.
13-0. Nobody's talking about them as de facto national champs.
I know.
I mean, come on now.
It's
Marshall
ridiculous.
Was undefeated.
But listen, we know the rules of college football right now. I know for those in the group of five, it sucks. You're probably never going to get into the playoff. But here's the reality. Your best win came after the selection. So you can't say that you belong there when your best win during the regular season. Listen, anytime you run the table is impressive. But your best win during the regular season was against Memphis. Twice. I mean, so you beat Memphis. That's great. But it doesn't mean you're one of the four best teams in the country. And oh, by the way, for those saying that UCF deserved to have the number four seed, Alabama was the number four seed. Alabama kind of quieted that argument with their performance in the Sugar Bowl against Clemson, the defending national champs, that they beat 24-6. So it's a baseless argument. And what aggravates me is it was the feel-good story of 2017, UCF, that is. And now the Knights have kind of, they're getting into that territory where they're becoming a bit of a punchline. So shame on Danny White. I mean, it's a great story, great team effort. But you know, pipe down. You're not the national champs.
Well, people were saying, oh, just let them be. They're having a little fun with it. But here's the problem that I have now. Now we're going to have all these college football hipsters say, yeah, that UCF team, right. We need 16 teams, right. 34 teams in the playoff. Next thing you know, we'll have a regular season that's non-existent. We'll have third stringers playing in week number 11 and 12 in the Iron Bowl because they know they're guaranteed a spot in the playoff.
Listen, just because you identify as the national champ does not make you the national champ. And if you're going to base it solely on records, oh, we had zero losses versus Alabama's one, guess what's going to happen? No one is going to schedule tough non-conference games any longer.
Agreed. And
it's
if UCF played in a Power 5 conference each and every week, sorry, you wouldn't be 13-0. When we come back, we'll be talking about Alabama's offense. Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonella live in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Studio 34.